just to make it clear that we are seeing soaring rates of mental health problems in children and teens, like we've never seen before. Over the past 10 years, the rates have been growing. The numbers used to be 1 in 5 children had significant enough emotional and behavioral problems that they needed to be seen. We can't even estimate post-COVID what those rates look like now.
Are you raising your family while also feeling like you're still growing up yourself? Do you wonder if you are getting it right? Welcome to Growing Up with Dr. Sarah. She's a pediatrician and a mom, and she helps the whole family.
Hi, I'm Dr. Sarah Adams, a board-certified pediatrician, but I'm not your pediatrician. Feel free to use my podcast as helpful information, but in no way do I intend my podcast to replace the advice of your physician. Your physician knows you and is in the best position to provide medical advice.
Welcome back to Growing Up with Dr. Sarah. This is part 2 of our conversation on suicide prevention and the CALM program, counseling on access to lethal means. Today, we're focusing on the how parents can recognize signs that a child or teen may be struggling, how to start those hard conversations, and why asking direct questions can be one of the most powerful ways to show care and keep kids safe. You'll hear practical guidance from youth and pediatric mental health experts Sherry Blair and Dr. Georgette Constantinou on partnering with trusted adults, working with pediatricians and community resources, and finding help when concerns feel urgent. This is tough, but a hopeful conversation, one grounded in connection, prevention, and the message that no family has to face this alone. Let's jump back in. Sherry, what is a good way to start that conversation at home, especially with a teen who might be resisting talking about it?
You know, I think just always keeping that open communication as best you can. You know, I know that there's time that they're in the room or they might not be available. So being somewhat respectful of when is a good time. And you know, and Georgette could probably add on to this as well. But, you know, just being, I think, being present, really hearing them, not jumping in, let them talk. If you can, ask open-ended questions. And I think as a mom myself, I think it's so important that they have other trusted adults to talk to too, and to not take that personally, if it's not you. because
I
know.
And you see Georgette and I both shake our head,
absolutely.
Right?
Because sometimes they're just not, they don't want to disappoint you, or they don't want to, they may be ashamed, or they, you know, they realize that you're worrying about other things and they don't want to add to your worries. And that's just things off the top of my head, but just, you know, having those other people in their lives, having them connected in some ways to their community, whether it's a school, you know, after school program or a during school program or a church or faith program or community group or sports, that just allows that many more what we call trusted adults in their life, that when they're having a struggling time, they have someone to talk to. Friends are great, and we want them, but we also want them to have the trusted adults that they can talk to, because sometimes, you know, we need that higher level of functioning to be able to help us get the help we need. So that's where I was like, encourage trusted adults to be in their life.
I couldn't agree with you more, Sherry. I've been nodding my head this whole time. And what I want to say is, if you see that your son or daughter isn't willing to speak to you, just say that. Say, you know, it seems like this is something you're not comfortable talking about with me, but I need you to have somebody to talk about. Can we go to your pediatrician? Can we go to our clergyman? Is there some, tell me who you might be willing to have this conversation with, because despite your reassurances to me, I'm still worried about you.
I'm still worried.
And I'm your parent, and it's my job to take care of you. It's my job to make sure you're safe. And it's okay if you can't share it with me, but we got to find somebody that you can. So to add on to where Sherry was talking, take them seriously. Take the behavioral changes or the emotional changes that you see seriously, and get help. there's many ways to reach out to resources. And if you can't do it alone or you're not sure what to do, there are lots of us that are here to help.
And Georgette, you already brought up a few of the things that parents can be looking for to identify if their child could be showing signs of depression. You were talking about not sleeping well or eating well. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that so they know what really they should be looking for?
Sure. So any changes in what we call the basic functioning, like sleep. So too much sleep or the extreme, too little sleep. Someone who's a busy bee and always moving around, who's getting really hyper, more hyper, or someone who's suddenly lethargic, doesn't want to do anything, pulling away from activities that they love, like their sports or their drama, isolating more than they normally do. We have lots of kids that are using electronic devices and media devices, and that's a worry of mine, separate conversation, but overuse, isolating, not coming to dinner, not eating or way overeating, slovenly, poor hygiene, not looking like themselves, their hair being dirty, somebody who used to really take hours to get ready to go to school before they would meet their peers, any of those, and of course, drop in academic performance. Someone who was a very good student who's really either not studying or, truthfully, can't concentrate, because depression really does make it difficult to focus or to concentrate. So that's the depressive side. If we start to see teens giving away some of their most prized possessions, if we see any kind of notes, anything on TikTok, we need to take those seriously. You know, well, I might not be here in the summer when we go on vacation. That would be a red flag to me.
Yes.
Starting to really go down a dark hole. We can see it in children's drawings. We can see it in some of their writing, pulling away from friends. It's a long, long list. We only need to hit a few of those buttons to say, I've got to evaluate this child for depression.
Yeah, those are very, very important. And like you said, I'd like to reiterate, should absolutely be taken seriously. And I really appreciate both of you talking about the importance of having an adult in their life that they can talk to, and even partnering with professionals. Who can we suggest that you talk to? And you brought up like coming to your pediatrician. And as you're saying that, my brain is already ticking through patients who I feel so honored that they trust me enough that they come and talk to me and to you both as well. How can parents best collaborate with their family's pediatrician or family therapist or other mental health professional if they're a young person or someone in their family struggling with anxiety, depression, trauma, family conflict, relationship issues to keep their kids safe? Does it take a village to help our young person? And I'll start with you, Sherry, and then Georgette, if you can add to that too, please.
Sure. Yeah. Georgette, as a psychologist, could probably answer it a little bit better than I, but just in my experience, being involved as much as you can, you know, if you have a concern about your child, you know, talk with their teacher, talk with the school counselor. It definitely takes a village. It's a whole group that needs to wrap around a youth when they're struggling. Actually, we need that all the time, but especially when they're struggling. So, look at different ways that you can, practice what the counselor might be asking you to do. And I know sometimes it's really tough because a lot of us are still working full time and we're trying to do this on top of everything else. No. But little steps, I think, can really make a difference and show that you're involved and that you care. So, Georgette, I'll let you add on from there.
I just think being open to treatment. There's a lot of stigma around receiving.
Yeah. Oh, good point.
The first thing I would say is get over it.
No.
Sorry to sound so crass, but if you think that it means that you're a failure as a parent, you're not. If you don't click well with a therapist, tell them. you know, I don't like what you're, I don't like how you're talking to me. This is someone you have to build a trusting relationship with. And so if I'm your therapist and I'm not listening to you, you need to tell me. You know, I asked you a question last week and I don't really feel that you answered me. I need better ways to talk to my child. You're not including me in the session. I really would like to be included at the end. I know you're talking to a teenager and you can't tell me all of what they say, but what can you tell me? Advocate for your child and advocate for yourself. I don't like to see therapists, and sorry for those therapists out there, who see a teenager, take them, say, hello, how are you? You must be Billy's mother, and then take the teen back and never speak to that parent again because they're talking to a teenager. That child is going back to that family. That family needs to know, what are the suggestions you're making, partnering, making it a partnership. I'm the therapist. I'm not going home with you for the next week or two.
Right.
So I need to give you my suggestions, my recommendations, and people need to really advocate for that in a very positive way, but to make it clear that they need some guidance here.
Yes. And is there a way that teenagers can also advocate for themselves?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They may not ever want to go back to that therapist because they hit really difficult conversations or traumatic events or something that really triggered them. And I always say to families at the very first stage, it's the day your son or daughter doesn't want to come that is the day you need to have them come.
Oh, yes.
The day that they're saying, I don't want to see her is the day that I need to see them.
Yeah. That's powerful. That really is. That because we're in, I always say, in that discomfort is where true change is starting to take place.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That can be very uncomfortable. Real therapy involves changing many things about ourselves. And that isn't a walk in the park.
No. No, not for adults, and definitely not for our children. But I do appreciate the fact that it's so important to not leave the caregivers out in the dust. And we're not trying to throw any therapists under the bus. No. It's just that it does take a village, and it is important that, and that even goes along, going back to the firearm safety and calm, it's important, I think, that if you do have family members that, you know, if you're taking action to safely store firearms and medications, that you want to hope that friends, family, others, and I think it's okay to advocate for that too, for your own children and for the children in your community.
Absolutely. I mean, I would say on that one, if it's okay, Sarah, I think we need to start, you know, when kids are toddlers, we're really good about locking up all the things that we think might be harmful for them.
Right.
And then as they age, you know, we do that less and less, obviously, because they can, you know, they can self-direct and they're not tend to drink chemicals unintentionally. But I honestly, I think that's a time that we actually need to continue to keep those practices going, because if we make it as part of your whole home safety, it's less threatening that way. It's an easier way to talk to, hopefully, their friends, families, your family, and just say, we just do this as part of our home safety kit. We keep these locked. We don't leave large amounts of medications out. We keep our firearms secure. You know, we have to, on the things when someone is possibly suicidal or vulnerable, we might have to keep an eye on them more, because, you know, they're vulnerable at that time. So some things have to shift, obviously, when there's a vulnerability identified. But overall, if we make this as part of our home safety, then it doesn't become a real issue just at one certain time, you know. So we do that as a full home plan. Home safety plan, basically.
Yeah. Just like when we talk to the young kids about fire safety and fire alarms. And I can remember doing that with my son. And to continue that thread, Sherry, if a parent or teen is worried about someone's safety, where can they turn for support or resources right away? What are the options?
Sure. So if they're concerned about the safety, I mean, there's always, if they just want someone to talk to, it doesn't have to be a suicidal, but just someone that they want to talk with, there's the 988 number. And it's interesting, a lot more kids seem to know about the number than their parents. So 988 is a suicide and crisis lifeline. It's 24/7, 365. And you can actually call them ahead. And not a crisis, but identify that it's not a crisis and just say you wanted to learn a little bit more about their services. They welcome that, too, if that makes you feel more comfortable ahead. So that's available. And then for locking medications or locking firearms, there's different programs throughout Summit County and throughout the region. Many police departments have accessible gun cable locks that are at no charge, or you can actually go on to Project ChildSafe and get a locking cable that way. Other programs, we have been working pretty extensively throughout Akron Children's in different capacities in different departments by providing some locking devices through their visits. So that's with their trusted physician or who they're seeing. That might be available there or at our Family Resource Center. I've also been doing a lot of community events at certain areas around the community and being able to provide some locking devices as well. You can also pick them up, at your store. There's medication lock boxes, there's gun boxes, there's safes. So you don't have to, you can look around and see what fits your needs the best. And they come in all different kinds of price ranges to hopefully match your budget.
Let's not forget about PERC. Mm-hmm. In the summit this part of the state, there's a program that has been in operation at least for the last 20 years. It's called, the short version is PERC. It's the Psychiatric Intake Response Center. There is a center in Mahoning Valley. There is also a center at Main Campus Akron. The number for that is 330-543-7472. The 7472 actually stands for PERC, P-I-R-C. But that is a 24/7 operation in our emergency room where there are trained mental health professionals who will do an on-site at the time. You may have to wait a bit depending on how many teens or children are there with their families. A full evaluation to determine how serious is this child and family, what's going on here. And we have seen thousands of children there.
Wow, that's amazing. And what resources may you suggest for communities even nationally, other than the 988?
Well, I think most counties around the country, mm-hmm. where you're close to a children's hospital, I would be starting to look through mm-hmm. the children's hospitals. We borrowed that concept of PERC from Cincinnati Children's mm-hmm. Hospital. Akron did it, and then it spread throughout the state. So I would be starting with hopefully the pediatricians and the children's hospitals. Most counties, now there's 88 counties in Ohio, not everyone has a child-serving mental health agency. But I think that that's where I would be going, where people are trained to evaluate children and adolescents.
And I would say, in addition to that, thank you for sharing that, most children's hospitals nationally, and we know we do have one at Akron Children's and also other national children's hospitals across the country, in the emergency rooms have mm-hmm. specific areas that are safe and confidential specifically for psychiatric concerns, mental health, and by no means, I tell my families, you're not going there to get admitted, or you're just going to make sure, is your child safe? Usually it involves a evaluation with a team like PERC, for example, and they'll be able to provide resources and make sure that your child is safe enough to go home.
That's the whole point, is to make a determination what needs to happen next. The statistics that I know are that less than a third of children are hospitalized. Most children are sent back home with recommendations as to where to go and what to do next.
You are both seasoned and compassionate experts. Is there anything else we're not addressing that parents need to know about calm or suicide prevention and keeping their children safe?
I guess something I'd like to end with is just to make it clear that we are seeing soaring rates of mental health problems in children and teens like we've never seen before. Over the past 10 years, the rates have been growing. The numbers used to be 1 in 5 children had significant enough emotional and behavioral problems that they needed to be seen. We can't even estimate post-COVID what those rates look like now. So you may hit a waiting list. If it's an emergency, you need to go to an emergency room, be patient. We're working as hard as we can to get as many people trained to take care of children's needs, but we are to crisis proportions, and I'm not an alarmist type of an individual at all. This has been growing and growing and growing, and I think COVID only made things worse. So we just really need to take these things seriously.
And I'd like to add to that if I can. I think one of the things that we're doing, and I know many others are trying to do as well, is to try to make sure that the mental health field access is where they have their trusted partnership already. So we have mental health therapists in the pediatrician's offices. We've opened regional centers to be able to have that access. Our community partners are crucial. So it can be, it doesn't have to be Akron Children's. It may be one of our community partner sites. And sometimes it takes a mix of things to be able to get that right mix for your child as well. And I guess one of the things also, we've talked about stigma and the fact that mental health has been a stigma over the years. I hopefully see that lessening. That is hopefully one thing that came out of COVID was that more empathy regarding mental health issues. But also that as we work with our kids, as we're talking with our kids, building those resiliency skills, those coping skills when they're young, when we jump in and solve everything for them, they have to learn how to do that. And so by encouraging them to be able to, solve their own issues a little bit, still want to be there and helping, of course, but having them build those coping skills so when they have a tough time, they have something to fall back on and they can get themselves through a tough moment. And just those protective factors are so important. I kind of talk of those resiliency skills or the protective factors. What do they have that helps protect them when they're struggling? Is it their own self? Can they go to that trusted adult? Is there, is there therapy available at accessible prices? So that's something as a community we have to work on so that the families aren't overwhelmed by the cost of therapy, but many times that can be at a sliding fee or at a reduced cost. So that as a community, we need to all work together and to look out for one another and help our kids to thrive. It's frustrating because we've seen the numbers climbing and we're seeing younger kids, unfortunately. But I think there's a lot of hope if we all continue to be engaged and think outside the box and think about the fact that, we may have to come up with something we never thought about before. Can our library help? Absolutely. Can our schools help? And, is there somewhere else in the community that we can bring in and help us, do better for our kids?
One more thing I'd like to add, and this is just something that I think we all need to be very cognizant of. Social media, our children are spending hours a day on social media. And when you asked before, Sarah, about signs and symptoms of depression or anxiety, I would very much caution parents to know what websites your kids are on, who they're hanging out with. There are some wonderful things on social media, and there are some terrifying things on social media. There are serious websites that help children think about ways to harm themselves, that kids who are depressed may end up getting into. So we need to monitor those too. And when we know that our children are not looking good, we need to figure out what's happening when they're spending their time, not just with their friends, but on websites that they have no business being on.
Yes, absolutely. I'm a huge proponent of talking to your kids all the time, even if you're not suspicious about what what apps they're on, what platforms, and who they're talking, and just be involved in that part of their lives early and often before it gets bad, but especially if you are seeing some of those signs.
Thank you for that.
Well, as we wrap up this ever important conversation, what message of hope, Sherry, you you mentioned hope, so I'm going to lead with that. What message of hope would you like to leave for parents and families listening today?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, I think it's just that many of us have been there. We're still getting through it. You're not alone. I think that together is so much easier and so much more powerful than by yourself. And you may not think about where that person might be. It might be just, you know, some group or you know, just come on interaction that came out that raised your day. Just how are we talking to each other? How are we role modeling for our kids? Georgette, when you mentioned about the social media on the youth, because I would be very worried if my child was in their room all the time, never coming out. But what am I doing in front of them? Am I on my social media throughout dinner? Am I? So the hope can be that if we help role model it, those kids, you know, that our kids can, you know, I guess I want to say, we could be better role models for them. So, because if we're expecting them to do it, we've got to be genuine or they're not going to listen to us.
It's true. It's true. And Georgette, your parting words of hope.
My parting words of hope would be, as a parent, to say to my child, I'm here for you. I'm going to walk this road with you. There's help available. We're not giving up. And things are going to get better. And I can promise you that.
Nice.
Sherry and Georgette, thank you so much for joining me, for the work you're doing through Calm to help save lives and really just empower families.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking on this very tough subject, Sarah. We appreciate the opportunity to share with you.
Absolutely.
To our listeners, if this conversation brought up strong feelings or concerns, please know help is always available. We'll share the links in the episode description for more information about the Calm program and its free online training. Together, we can help make every home a place where children and teens feel safe, supported, and heard. Thanks for listening to Growing Up with Dr. Sarah. Take care, stay safe, and let's grow up together.
Produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.